Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of Wrestle Chat Radio's Raw Report. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next hour, we will be discussing the world of professional wrestling at 347-215-8486. 347-215-8486. If you'd like to get in on our conversation, of course, as always, you can hit us up in our chat room. We'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. Last night's Monday Night Raw, folks, from Atlanta, Georgia, felt more like a Raw is War episode than probably any episode I've seen in recent memory. And that's a good thing. It's not a bad thing. We started out with Cody Rhodes in his home state, obviously, hitting the ring. And the thing about Cody Rhodes is, his shtick can get old, and it's very, very important that he modifies it a little bit and becomes a little less of a politician, you know, shaking hands and kissing babies sort of thing, and everybody's wonderful, and starts to become just more Cody Rhodes. And I'm seeing him start to do that. I'm seeing him start to do that a little bit. Yeah, he still does, and it's fine that he does. He still slaps hands with fans. He still gives kids the belt. All that's fine. But the golly gee, I'm so glad everybody's here and we're all in the ring together. That's got to end at some point, because that gets really old and it starts to feel disingenuous. And last night I didn't feel that anymore. Yeah, he did say it's great to be in my home state and stuff, but there was a different feel last night. It was basically Cody Rhodes acknowledging that he's happy to be in his home state. He still acknowledged the fans, but he didn't stimp on it. He didn't dwell on it. He didn't say, we're all going to war against Brock Lesnar, not just me. He didn't do any of that kind of stuff. He seemed genuine. He got a little choked up when he talked about his mom being at ringside. The minute he introduced his mom at ringside, I realized Brock Lesnar at some point would come out and destroy him in front of his mom. But that's not the point. The point is, this felt very real. It felt very genuine. And I know there's a lot of people who are saying Cody's mom kind of blew it because she wasn't upset enough. She should have been screaming and crying and hysterical. Her son's being beaten up right in front of her. Absolutely incorrect. This is a woman who has been how long in the business? Seen her husband, her other son, right? Presumably Cody beaten up many times. Many times. So her reaction of just not being too pleased with Brock Lesnar, but not being overly emotional, was an absolutely real one. I was waiting for her to go overboard. I was waiting for her to have been coached to, you know, scream and cry and holler and hold your, you know, hide your eyes and all that kind of stuff. And I said, if she does this, it's going to feel phony, because this is a woman who's been around the business forever and she shouldn't feel that way. And she didn't. She absolutely didn't. She did a brilliant job. Did exactly what she should have done. Exactly what she should have done. Cody was excellent. Brock Lesnar was excellent. The heat on Brock Lesnar now is legit. And I think this was a very strong opening segment. I really do. Now, there's a lot of people who say, well, it was obvious Brock was coming out, and I'm one of them. I knew the minute he introduced his mom and his family there, I said, yeah, Brock's coming out. But still, they teased that he wasn't. And they did it very well with Cody saying, well, I'll come back at 9 o'clock. I'll come back at 10 o'clock. Hell, I'll come back at 5 minutes to 11 until you come out. Very, very strong opening, Mike. I was really impressed with this opening, and I'm glad to see Cody Rhodes. It's starting to modify his shtick a little bit to to be a little bit less, sugary.
Yeah, I liked it. Yeah, he did the thing with the handing of the belt to the kid, whatever. I get that, right? And yeah. You're right about the his mother. And actually, I think it would be Dustin's stepmother, because I think they're not. I think what it is,
right.
Is Dustin. Yeah, it's Dustin's stepmother. So yeah. Yeah, and she was married to Dustin for how long, you know? So,
right.
I mean, at least what 36 years, if not more, because he's in his mid 30s now, right? Cody is, so
yep.
So go figure, right? So yeah, I liked it. It felt like you said, it felt like Raw's War.
Yeah, there was a very genuine spot. See, this is the thing. There's even a genuine, see, even the small things. You got to watch. Like when Cody handed the kid the belt, the kid's reaction was so whatever that it actually made Cody kind of smile, laugh. I think that was genuine. I don't think that was fake. You know how wrestlers will come out and they'll have a fake smile on their face and they'll pat a kid on the head? And it's almost like a politician. I got to kiss another baby. I don't think Cody feels that way. In fact, I know he doesn't, because I've talked to him. He genuinely is happy to do that, because he grew up in the business. He knows how it felt. So the thing that Cody, at least in my opinion, had going against him was that he was overly sugary when it came to the fans. I didn't like, and I still don't, when he does the, we're all in this ring together. No, you're not. No, you're not. Fans know that. Don't kiss that much ass. Appreciate the fans. Give the kids the belt. I like that. I like all that stuff. He's one of the few superstars who genuinely does seem to want to interact with the fans and is appreciative. So certainly show that. But don't dwell on it. Last night he didn't dwell on it. Last night this seemed like a real person. It didn't seem like a guy running for office, which he always seems like when he comes out to me. Last night, it wasn't, I want your applause. It was, I'm here and I'm glad you're here, but I got a job to do. That's the Cody Rhodes I want to see. That's the Cody Rhodes that could potentially, at some point, be the top guy. So if he can continue that, his popularity will continue. If he goes back to the old school politicking, it's not going to, because fans are going to turn on him, I'm telling you. I always said he felt like a used car salesman. Last night he didn't feel like a used car salesman. Last night he felt genuine. That's the Cody Rhodes you need to see. So I thought it was a pretty strong opening. Brock Lesnar did a good job, Tom, and I think this has created some heat for the SummerSlam match. So, you know, mission accomplished.
Yeah, and, you know, it was really cool to I know that they were in Cody's hometown. I know they were in Atlanta, so, and the announcers even made that very clear. When his music hit, and he didn't, like, the one thing I noticed among many is that he didn't come out in a suit. He came out in his wrestling gear, or
yes.
Quasi-wrestling gear, which was cool. I was like, okay, this is different. The fans they just lost their minds. It was awesome to hear that kind of response and to see the look on Cody's face, like almost like he wasn't expecting it to be that awesome. So you could see like his fan interaction, and the fans were even losing their minds when he handed the kid the belt that he hugged one of them. That was pretty cool. And you could tell like it was just very, it wasn't, like you said before, it wasn't like used car salesman, I'm a politician kissing babies, you know, going around campaigning. That was a very genuine emotion. That was cool.
Yeah, it was definitely a good spot. And all of that helps. Because if you come out feeling disingenuous, if you come out kissing the fan's ass, saying, oh, you fan, you're in here in the ring with me. And every time I feel like I can't get up off the mat, I look at all you hardworking fans who paid your money to see me, and it energizes me. Nobody wants to hear that because it's phony and bullshit. And that's so 1980s. Nobody wants to hear it. And then when Brock Lesnar came out, everybody would be like, good, beat his ass. He's a little crybaby, disingenuous, whatever. That didn't happen. See, this is the Cody Rhodes, I'm telling you. This is the Cody Rhodes we need to get. And if you think it's the same one that's been coming out for week after week after week, take another look at the tape. It's not. Like Tom said, he didn't come out in a suit, acting like whatever. He felt more genuine. He acknowledged the fans, but he didn't kiss anybody's ass. He got right to the point. It was a much better and a much more realistic Cody Rhodes. And that's why, obviously in his hometown, but even if it wasn't in his hometown or his home state, Brock Lesnar would have got booed out of the building still because Cody did a really good job. And Lesnar did a really good job. So a very strong opening segment, Todd. I enjoyed it.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, that opening segment with Cody Rhodes and Brock Lesnar and Cody's family at ringside, it was a strong, very well segment. And it was one of the, it reminds me from the Raw is War Attitude Era days.
It really does. Now, kudos to, there was a little kid setting to, well, the way the camera is, it would be my left of Cody's mom. He was a little blonde kid. I don't know who he is. But kudos to that kid, because if looks could kill, Brock Lesnar wouldn't make it to SummerSlam. That kid was genuinely upset. Which is just strengthens the segment. I don't know if the kid was family and was in on it, and he was just so good at playing the game that he, I don't know. All I know is that kid looked genuine upset. So, and everything worked in that segment. It was a very, very good segment leading in. We then got Matt Riddle versus Gunther and Giovanni Vinci and company barred from ringside, which is good. Because Kaiser and Vinci, let's face it, every single time they're at ringside, the distraction thing's getting old because it's almost taking away from Gunther being so undefeatable. You're saying, well, of course he is. It's almost like Roman Reigns, where you're like, well, Roman Reigns undefeatable because the Usos are always there, and then Solo was always there, and if it wasn't for them, he'd be defeated 15 times, and after a while, you start to feel like he's not really invincible. He's just, he's got the deck stacked against his opponent. So I'm glad to see they're doing this with Gunther, because you don't want really Gunther to get that feel. Good match, solid match, felt good. The right person won. Matt Riddle's, you know, worth to the company has dropped. There's no question. Matt Riddle is going to be a guy who they're going to use to, yeah, he's still going to sell tickets because there are people who like him, especially younger kids and stuff. I know he has the pot-smoking thing going, but the kids just like his goofiness and all that kind of stuff, and stoners like him. And you can get heat off of beating him up and stuff like that. So he's going to be that guy who's just like on the very high end of the mid-card to the very low end of the main event. I think that's where they're going to use him probably best at this point, at least until he proves himself a little more. And they've used him as fodder for Drew McIntyre. Let's face it, time that after Gunther beats somebody, he grabs a microphone and gives a speech and basically says, I'm through with Matt Riddle. I've destroyed him. And if Drew McIntyre wants some of this, come and get it. Good segment. Good match. Good idea to have Gunther take the microphone after on his own. I have no problems with this. I thought this was a very good opening match to Monday Night Raw, Mike.
Yeah, I think it was a very good match. And heck, you know, we know that he's been, that he's got some legit, that Riddle has some legit MMA cred, and it showed because he actually, Gunther did a very good job selling some of those strikes and some of the knees and the kicks and the stuff that Riddle was doing to him. When,
yeah.
Particularly when Riddle, one of the best spots in that match was when Riddle reversed the power bomb into the triangle.
Right. Yeah, and I think he also did a good job doing something he very seldom does, meaning Gunther, in the sense that he sold a little bit of surprise that he couldn't finish off Matt Riddle with one of the moves. Gunther doesn't do that very much. That's a standard with a few people where they'll look like, what, that didn't finish him? Gunther never does that. And this time he did. This time he took a look at Matt Riddle like, how is that possible? That was good. It helped sell Matt Riddle as, you know, look, he knows before he gets in the ring he's beaten Matt Riddle. His job is to look strong and look like, well, I polished off a very good athlete reasonably easy, but I still have to sell that Matt Riddle is tough. I still have to sell that Matt Riddle gave me a run for my money, and he did it. He did it. So he did his job. He did his job perfectly. Riddle is, you know, listen, Riddle's on the untrustworthy list. I'm sorry, but he is. I like Matt Riddle and all, but listen, Riddle's been in drug rehab twice. He's had some issues. He's had some lawsuits. He's had some this, that, and the other thing. The WWE's forgiven him every single time. I think now they're going to take a step back and say, before we do any major pushing of you, let's see what happens after 6 months, 8 months. I think Riddle's kind of right where he is going to stay, at least for a little while. And that's fine, because that contributes quite a bit. This helps the Drew McIntyre-Gunther feud tremendously. Tremendously. Next up, we go backstage, where Judgment Day – well, actually, Judgment Day came out to cut a promo, right? That's right. Listen, Dominic Mysterio cannot speak. Dominic Mysterio just cannot speak. It has now become audience participation that every time Dominic Mysterio gets a mic, you just shout him down. It's very funny. Very funny. Everybody else got a chance to talk. Damian Priest had to talk for Dominic because the crowd wouldn't let Dominic talk. Then Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn came out. They talked a little bit of trash, and then Damian Priest challenged them to put their tag team titles on the line. And Kevin Owens, in a fit of anger, says that's fine, which is actually a pretty smart psychological move on the part of the writers, because the minute you've built up Kevin Owens as a hothead who sometimes says things off the top of his head that he shouldn't say, right? Well, when he said, yeah, it's fine, I don't care, I'll put the belts on the line, the first thing I think people said was, I wonder, because why would they do that? Why would that be a last-minute thing? And then you could blame it on Kevin Owens. Well, you shouldn't have done that. You shouldn't have put it on the line. Now, I knew they weren't losing. But it does cast a little shadow of a doubt. Now, right before this, Rhea Ripley had attacked Raquel Rodriguez backstage and supposedly injured her knee. This was also a really good segment because that sent Raquel Rodriguez into the trainer's room where they said, well, I mean, technically you're cleared, but we really wish you wouldn't participate in the match because we don't think you're 100%. The show seemed to have a pretty good flow to it, but I just think it's hilarious, Mike, how literally they won't let Dominic Mysterio talk.
Really? It is hilarious. And it's not, I mean, to me, it's not getting tired. It's not getting to where, I mean, the whole, we talked about the Cody Rhodes thing about him, you know, having to change his deal because it was getting tired, right? Well, this isn't getting tired. And what I really liked about when Owens and Zayn came out, Zayn basically said, look, I've been trying to help him get his anger in check, right? And basically, I've been trying, but I think my friend has something to say about what you've been saying, and he handed him the mic. And obviously, basically saying, look, I've been trying to do this, but sometimes it's better if I let Kevin have his say, you know, let him off the chain, in other words.
Yeah, and it also, again, it would have provided an excuse had they lost for Sami Zayn to say, maybe you shouldn't have been so hot-headed. I was warning you about being hot-headed like this. So there was that at least little shadow of a doubt cast, which is good writing, Tom.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, the one thing I thought, and I can't speak for, you know, others, I could just speak for me, but the one thing I thought when he agreed to put the titles on the line is that that Money in the Bank briefcase can be, you know, submitted for any title, right? So what if they wear them down, they still lost, and they wear them down so badly they hurt Kevin Owens or Sami Zayn, and Damian Priest turns in the briefcase.
Right.
And gets, like, holy crap, that would have been cool. Like, that's instantly what I thought.
It could have potentially been done, too, because they are for any of the belts. But I think they got, obviously, as we know, I think they got a little bigger plan going on. But good segment, Todd. Another strong segment for Monday Night Raw.
Well, you're absolutely right, Gail. Like you said, when Kevin Owens, the only one thing I don't like about Kevin Owens is going ballistic. He needs to stop doing that. Just be like, I'm going to here kick your ass and that's
it. They're building that up for a reason. I'm not sure what the reason is. I'm really not sure what the reason is. Anyway, we get Raquel Rodriguez and Liv Morgan defending their belts against Sonya Deville and Chelsea Green. And I kind of knew that they gave the excuse that Raquel Rodriguez was injured, and I said to myself, they're going to lose this match, but I'm not convinced they're going to lose the championships, but they're going to lose the match. Somehow they're going to lose the match. Quite obviously, they want Raquel Rodriguez and Rhea Ripley one-on-one. I told you that last week. I also told you I don't know how they're going to do this if they keep them in the tag team, because it doesn't make any sense. You're the tag team champions, and you're going off on a tangent to fight Rhea Ripley. Doesn't make sense to me. This harkens back to, I don't know why they won it to begin with. I guess they're just transitional champions, but I mean, then you got to go backwards and say, well, why did the NXT women lose so much to them then? Why didn't you let one of them just maintain the championship so you had a very strong women's champion, tag team champions coming up from NXT? It seems really weird how they're playing musical belts with the women's division's tag team titles. Having said that, I love Chelsea Green. Chelsea Green's fantastic. Sonya Deville's very, very good. I'm glad they got the title. I totally want the ring announcer to stop doing the Chelsea Green thing. It's so dumb. You going to do that for every person now? Or just Chelsea Green? Apparently she has a crush on Chelsea Green. I don't blame her for that. But apparently she does, because she's the only one she does it with. I was a little bit surprised. I'm not going to lie. I was a little bit surprised when they won. I'm like, well, shit. Why in the world would you have both former women's NXT champions drop the belts if you were just going to let Chelsea Green and Sonya Deville have it to begin with? Seems a little weird. But whatever the plan is, I knew that Raquel Rodriguez was not going to fight Rhea Ripley one-on-one if they maintain those belts, Mike. So this is the way they got around it.
Right, and we all like this tag team, you know, of Chelsea and the other one, you know. And to me, this tag team has the feel of Team RK-Bro, because Chelsea Green is the comedic version of that. The comedian on the team, right? And she plays that character really well. And Sonya Deville is kind of Randy Orton, kind of.
Yeah, she plays the straight man, sort of. Yeah, she basically does the straight man job, but I think they might be transitional champions. I think you're going to see, I don't think you're going to see a long reign from them. Like I said, they're playing musical belts with them, Todd, but it's good to see them win it. I think they deserve it.
Well, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, that ring announcer last night, she's got to stop being Tony Chibble saying the Radar Superstar's name, too. When I remember with that, too.
Yeah.
She's got to stop doing the Chelsea Green thingy.
Maybe she should put on an Irish accent when she said, Finn Balor. I mean, just stop. Announce. Nobody's there to see you. God almighty. It's annoying. But anyway, yeah, listen, I almost thought Liv Morgan was going to turn heel. But then later on, that turns out not to be the case, apparently. I still say it's possible. I still say that at SummerSlam, if that's where they're going to have that match, I still say it's possible that Liv Morgan might just cost Raquel Rodriguez her chance. Because she shot her some daggers, so they lost. She defended her later on, came back out. We'll talk about that. But the bottom line is, something's up there. There's got to be a bigger reason for losing the belt than just, well, we want Rhea Ripley to fight Raquel Rodriguez, because they were going to do the same thing with Sasha Banks and Naomi. They were going to let them have title shots and still be the women's tag team champion. So I'm not sure. I'm not sure what's up with that. But overall, good match, Tom.
Agreed. And, you know, I said last night on the thread, on the group, that I didn't see it coming. I thought it was going to be a no contest or a disqualification or what have you. I didn't think that Chelsea Green, who, by the way, is probably the most beautiful woman in WWE, and she could work, and I'm warming up to her gimmick. It's growing on me. I didn't think that it was going to be that they were going to take the championships. I thought it was going to be a different way, that they were going to win, but they weren't going to win the belts, which is fine that they did. I thought that was pretty cool, but the I have to agree with you with the ring announcer thing. That's dumb. It's only a matter of time before the fans just start, like, you know, mimicking her, which is going to be even equally dumb. Honestly, if the WWE write, if I'm a writer for the WWE right this moment, this is where I start incorporating heelish things for Liv Morgan, because this is a good way to bring Bray Wyatt back if you're going to have her join that stable or be in that stable. You can incorporate her. You can incorporate Braun Strowman. You can incorporate a whole lot of people. And this is a way for them.
If they want to turn her heel, I mean, now she has an opportunity. Because you could start very small. I mean, you could start by having her say, well, you know, it was a shame that she got injured, and that's why we lost. There's no question. So it's Rhea Ripley's fault. I mean, if it was me, I wouldn't have defended the belt under those circumstances. But it's still Rhea Ripley's fault. And then have, you know, Raquel Rodriguez kind of like, well, what are you saying, you know? And then just build it up and build it up and build it up until maybe at SummerSlam, Liv Morgan does something and says, I think the whole idea was you just wanted to break this team up because you thought you were going to be the champion, but that's not the way it works. That would be an interesting turn for Liv Morgan, and I think it might actually create some more interest in her character. So we'll see what ends up happening with that. At least there's some branches on the tree with that. We then get the Viking Raiders versus Alpha Academy in a Viking rules match, which is basically there aren't any rules. Now, they had one of these Viking rules matches before, and it was okay, but it was a little bit silly. They came out with a fake boat and the whole thing. And I said, this is a very good opportunity to basically throw some crap on this show. You're going to have one of these gimmicky matches like the Halloween matches or the Christmas tree matches are, and it's just going to stall the whole freaking thing. And it didn't. It was a great match. These guys busted their ass to the point where I forgot about the stupid Viking ship. I forgot about the gimmicky stuff, and I'm just like, oh, oh, oh. And then I'll tell you, one of the only times in the last probably year I actually jumped up out of my seat is when Valhalla put Maxxine Dupri through a table. I did not see that coming at all. Not at all. If you would have told me that's what was going to happen, I would have said, yeah, you're completely crazy. That woman is not going through no table. That one was like, whoa. Also, what I loved was Otis's expression when he realized Maxxine was hurt. And here's Otis against two of the Viking Raiders. And he just gets that look in his eye like, okay, now you're dead. And they're saying, well, you know, now Otis is kind of stuck alone because Chad Gable's hurt, and this is going to be bad for Otis. And instead, Otis is cleaning house. And the announcers are selling it perfectly, saying, well, you've done pissed Otis off now, and he's like a one-man wrecking crew in there. But then Valhalla gets involved. This was a very strong match. And a lot of the stuff looked like it really hurt. And Sarah Logan did an excellent job of putting Maxxine Dupri through the table. She did an excellent job of taking it. It was a very shocking moment. It was one I absolutely did not expect. And listen, these two teams work really, really well together. And it's very rare that I say continue a feud like this because it's like, God, it doesn't mean that much. It's starting to feel like it means more. So I'm starting to think to myself, we're going to have an end game to this. And it's probably going to be pretty epic because these guys are getting really used to working well with each other. And there's definitely a chemistry there, Mike. They put on an excellent match.
Right. And you know, at some point, you're going to have Maxxine versus Valhalla. You know that's coming, right? And we're starting to see the improvement in coming into Maxxine, coming through Maxxine, and basically making Chad Gable look like he is Master Gable, you know, that the master teacher that he is, you know. And so there's going to have to be a match between Sarah Logan. Yeah, Sarah might have between Valhalla and Maxxine Dupri. Probably Valhalla will win that match. And Sarah Logan is talented enough to make her look really, really good, you know, to the point of making her look really good.
I was really impressed with it, Tom. There was one point in the match where Otis literally caught Ivar in midair. I mean, you can do that. There's no bluffing that.
Yeah, that was absolutely impressive. Listen, that was one of the best matches I've seen the Viking Raiders do. I mean, the Alpha Academy always has good matches, regardless whether they win or lose. But the Viking Raiders really, really impressed me last night. Everything they did looked like it hurt, because it probably did. And I honestly, you know, again, when I see Otis's expressions and everything that he does is just so entertaining that it actually makes me chuckle, especially with the get the tables. That was hysterical. It was kind of paying homage to the that was, and you see the expression like he was genuinely like gonna laugh because it was like paying homage to the Dudley Boys. But that was like that was so much fun. And again, what you said, it made me forget about the hokey, you know, fake boats and all kinds of Viking gimmick outside the ring. It wasn't a gimmick match. It was very entertaining, and man, did I jump out of my seat when Sarah Logan put Maxxine through the table. I enjoyed the
match. I did not see that coming at all. I just absolutely did not see that coming. The thing is, these guys they came out with a real gimmicky whatever, and fans are ready to say, well, it might be fun, but we're just going to point at it and laugh. Oh, look, they're coming out on a Viking ship, and they got those stupid costumes, and they think they're Vikings and stuff. I think last night they earned, like, some respect where people are like, whoa, they took some bumps. They had some spots that, you're right, it wasn't a gimmicky match. It was just a hard-hitting, if Jim Ross was there, he would have called this one a slobber knocker, right? It was just, it was pretty brutal, and there were some spots in it that I just thought was super impressive, Todd. I thought this was a really, really strong match.
Well, you're absolutely right there. You're absolutely right there, like you said, about that match last night, that that Viking Raider gimmicky match last night. It was better than the last one we saw when they wrestled the New Day.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Next up, we had Nikki Cross, who kind of just got thrown to the wolves with Shayna Baszler. This was basically just a reason for Ronda Rousey to be up in the skybox taunting Shayna. But I thought this time Shayna did a much better job saying, the problem with you is you think I'm just trying to be you. You know, because she said, well, you're just a ripoff of me. And Shayna Baszler said, well, if I'm a ripoff of you, the deal is, in this ring, in a professional wrestling ring, I'm a better Ronda Rousey than you are. That was a really good line. I think Shayna Baszler is going to be the face. That's the way I get it. She started up the stairs after Ronda Rousey. Security told her she couldn't go. She didn't try to throw him around or anything. So I'm thinking she's probably going to be the face. I mean, I'm not even going to grade this match or even consider it, Mike, because it wasn't even a match. It was just a gimmick to get to Ronda Rousey and Shayna Baszler jawjacking with each other. But I still enjoyed the segment.
Yeah, and this is another thing that would have fit very nicely on a Raw's War or in an Attitude Era, you know?
Yep.
I mean, it really yep. would have, and that's the deal. I mean, how many times did we see back then, you know, like DX or somebody like that in a skybox talking to somebody in the ring? That yep. happened. So, yeah, this was a fit. And look, I have a big feeling, and whenever this match takes place, because of the rumors that Ronda's going back to MMA, going back to UFC, that Shayna's going to win the match anyway, right? So, yeah, they're doing a good job of promoting the match, but Shayna's here, and she's here to stay, and she's going to win that match.
It would appear so. Tom, I thought, again, listen, I feel bad for Nikki Cross. I think she's way more talented than to just be thrown to the wolves like this, but you know, they had to do something quick with Shayna, and it really was just to get to her and Ronda doing the jaw jacking, and I still think they did an excellent job.
I disagree with putting Nikki Cross in there, because Nikki Cross just has, you know, so much more potential than being a, you know, cannon fodder for Shayna and Ronda. I think they could have thrown somebody else, maybe local talent or somebody in the back who we haven't seen in a while. I don't think Nikki Cross was the right decision. But Shayna, and this was one of the segments or promos that both Shayna and Ronda both did a good job. And actually the fans were like, you know, intently listening, like, ooh, what's going to happen here? Here comes Shayna, through the crowd. What's going to happen? It really piqued my interest, because I was about to, like, kind of write it off, because I thought it was like, I'm not really that interested. Now I'm kind of interested. Now they peaked.
What made this good, I think, is Ronda brought up a point that I thought was good. I'm sure she was told to bring it up, but I thought it was excellent when she said, look, I was thrown into this with very little training. And literally thrown to the wolves. Here you go. You're going to be in WrestleMania. You're going to do this, that, and the other thing. And I survived. Because I'm the top woman in combat sports today of any kind. And when she said that, kind of made me feel like what I said she should have said ages ago. And that is, they don't want her to come out and say this sport is rigged. But she was sort of saying, look, I can come in here with no training whatsoever and dominate. You had all the training in the world down at NXT, and you're not dominating. You're not dominating at all. As a matter of fact, you're floundering. And so with that sort of innuendo, I said to myself, geez, Mike, you know, it feels more real.
Yeah, it does feel more real. And the fact of the matter is, like I said, it feels more real, and we basically know who's going to win the match. The rumors are true, right? So it feels more – and look, they could absolutely – this match, they could absolutely turn it into an MMA-style match if they wanted to. You know?
I wish they would move from your mouth to Vince McMahon's ears. That's what needs to happen. Now, the reason they probably won't, Mike, is because Shayna wants to prove she's a better professional wrestler. So they probably won't turn it into an MMA-style match, but, man, I would love to see that. That would be freaking awesome. Next up is The Miz. Listen, you can say what you want about The Miz. I know there's a lot of people who listen to this show do not like The Miz. I absolutely do. I absolutely do. He always has a decent segment. He's always entertaining. He always has something fun to say or do. And this was no exception. Becky Lynch came out looking like she was ready for bed, but that's okay. I thought her reaction was great when she threw both of the chairs and The Miz had to pretend to be afraid of her, and he backed up and tried to get out of the ring and stuff, and she's yelling at him, bring out the power. I already know you've got Trish Stratus and Zoe Stark, so you might as well bring him out. That was actually pretty good, too, because, you see, so many times we're forced to believe, oh, that wrestler is so stupid they didn't realize that somebody else is coming out, or they're so stupid they didn't realize that so-and-so might be there to sneak attack them, or, oh, we're supposed to believe that there's no main event, you know, until somebody comes out and challenges them. This was Becky Lynch basically saying, I already know how this works. I already know Trish Stratus and Zoe Stark's coming out, so get to it. I really like that. The Miz selling that was very important, too. Trish Stratus and Zoe Stark came out. They were all fantastic until Trish Stratus blew it. When she was supposed to attack Becky, there was a signal. I don't know what the signal was, but she didn't get it. And there was a real clunky thing where she, like, went to attack her and stopped for a second and then went through with it anyway, and it looked fake. It did not look good. I'm not going to lie. It did not look. However, that segment was so strong, it didn't take that much away from it. It really didn't. Becky Lynch ends up cleaning house with him anyway. I thought it was a good segment. And, oh, by the way, we are now getting Trish Stratus versus Becky Lynch, I guess, at SummerSlam. And I guess if Becky Lynch loses, she has to thank Trish Stratus. So it's a hearkening back to a Kiss My Feet match or a Kiss My Ass Club match or whatever. I'm fine with that. I'm fine with that. It should be a good match overall. Little bit clunky there, Todd, with the attack at the end, but other than that, it was good.
Well, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, there was a spot when Becky Lynch says to The Miz, tiny testicles.
Yeah, she got that all started again. I just thought they all did a really good job, except Tom. There was that one spot, and I don't know what the hesitation was. There was some miscommunication somewhere, but that definitely looked clunky.
Yeah, that was definitely clunky, but I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that The Miz, and like you, I love The Miz. I think he's hysterical, and he does everything perfectly, from his expressions to his selling to everything. When he was backed up in the corner, like he was through the ropes, and Becky Lynch was like threatening him. He said, I already know you got Zoe Stark and Trish, so just bring him out here. He reacted, and he had the expression. He was like, well, thanks for ruining the surprise. He completely stole it.
He does a fantastic job. Again, you know, don't take it from me. Take it from AJ Styles, who said, to be honest with you, he's probably one of the best heels in the industry. And that's pretty high praise coming from somebody as decorated as AJ Styles, who had so many years in the business. The Miz is not a fly-by-night. A lot of people, he's a reality TV star, became a wrestler, and he's not really. He's the real deal. He's the real deal. Did you notice that spot, Mike? I don't know what happened. It looked like Trish Stratus was supposed to say something else and forgot and then just attacked.
Right. And this is a woman that's been on the show. Well, I mean, I'm not saying injured, but on the show for how long, and now she's just coming back, you know, to have a kind of a run here and there, you know, and this, that, and the other. So, yeah. And look, here's something else that was – yeah, she Becky Lynch looked like she got out of bed, and they still did her, you know, they're still calling her Big Time Bex and all that stuff, but she spoke and acted like the last kicker. Because,
yep.
Look, she beat them both down, and not only that, but she used a doggone mask to headbutt, Zoe Storm.
Mike, did you notice that a little small attention to detail? I know Trish Stratus, I guess, really was injured and really did have the mask on for that injury, but I thought they were overplaying it like, I'm keeping on forever. But when they took it off, now, I don't know whether it was real or whether they put a little makeup on her, but you could see black and blue on her nose.
Yes. Yes. I mean, we over the past years, we've said, we basically got on the WWE for lack of detail. Recently,
right.
Now, they're starting to get to the point of where they're very detail oriented, and they're not missing a thing.
I was impressed with that. I said, "Whoa, how about that?" Now, I don't know if that's real or that was whatever, but it was a nice touch that the cameraman closed in on it too, so you could see she definitely had something going on there. We then get to Bronson Reed versus Shinsuke Nakamura, and I thought, Jesus, we're just going to get a squash match, and poor Shinsuke, he's relegated into doing that kind of stuff now, and this was a much better match than I thought. Much, much better match than I thought. Give credit to Bronson Reed for one thing. He obviously was dominating when it came to the strength thing. But when Shinsuke would do his striking, even for a guy who's twice the size of Shinsuke, he was selling it. Enough that the announcers are saying, you don't want to stand there and strike with Shinsuke Nakamura. It's not going to end well. Doesn't matter how big you are. You can't just stand there and strike with him because every one of his strikes can knock you down, knock you out. That was a good attention to detail. It was a much longer match than I thought it was going to be. And all of a sudden, Tommaso Ciampa just jumps in the ring. Okay, he has motivation. Bronson Reed attacked him in his match against The Miz and just goes to work on Bronson Reed. Shinsuke Nakamura then turns around, realizes this guy got me disqualified, and kicks him right in the face. And then backstage has a very interesting interaction where he says, I am sick and tired of everybody sticking their nose in my business. If this gets us to either A, a much harder-edged Shinsuke Nakamura, who's more of a loner, or B, a heel Shinsuke Nakamura, I'm all for this. I'm all for using Shinsuke Nakamura much, much more aggressively. Because heel or face, he has the ability to reach into that crowd and make you care. So what I thought was going to be sort of just a filler match that wasn't going to really amount to anything turned out to have some branches on the tree, Tom. So good for them.
Yeah, it sure did. And Bronson Reed did a better job this week. And the announcers really sold up, you know, saying that you don't want to stand there and strike with Shinsuke because he's the, you know, master of strong style. He's the ultimate striker. That was good. They really sold that up. I did not see this coming where Shinsuke was going to kick Tommaso Ciampa in the face. I didn't see that coming. I was like, oh, that's interesting. And then they went to the backstage segment where he legitimately looked upset that, like, this is the last, you know, this is all I can stand. I can't stand no more. I'm tired of people, interfering in my business. That's good. That made people go, now I'm kind of like, I'm interested. I want to see where this goes. This is going to be cool.
Yeah, I thought, this was just going to be a filler match, Mike, but they put another branch out on that tree, and I'm digging the fact that we may see a different Shinsuke Nakamura soon.
Yeah, again, this is another match that felt like a Raw is War match.
Really did.
If you remember back then, there were many matches that you said, oh, this is going to be a filler match, and then it turned out to be something more because it had some underwritings in it, right? Well, this was that.
Yes.
And if it gets him to be in that strong style owner, fine. If it gets him to be in a guy that just has had enough of people interfering in his match, fine. I mean, look, I can see a feud between him and Ciampa because, remember, Ciampa was having his run and Shinsuke kind of came in there and did something during that run and ended up with the championship in NXT, right? So
right.
They have history together. They have history
and
together.
And it's very realistic because he's right. See, this is the thing. It's very realistic because it makes Shinsuke look like, look, I'm a nice guy. I'm out here trying to compete, trying to entertain the fans. I'm trying to do the best I can in my career. Hasn't been going super well the last couple of months. And now, once again, when I'm on the verge of maybe getting a big victory and getting myself somewhere, I get interfered with again, and I've just had enough. It's actually logical. It's actually logical. Everything that came before it and this is actually in with each other, and it's logical. So I was really impressed with this. I thought, once again, you know, listen, Shinsuke Nakamura, very underrated when it comes to even interviews and things. He can get the job done, Todd.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, about Shinsuke Nakamura, he was. I remember Eddie Guerrero did both. He was good as a face and a heel. He could play the crowd in both roles as a face and a heel, like Kurt Angle did as well.
Yep. Shinsuke's very good at what he does. I'd love to see a little bit of a run as a heel for him. I think it would be a lot of fun. Or even just a more serious Shinsuke who says, fun and games is over. I got to, you know, it's time for me to start getting on a winning streak. We'll see what happens with him. But it's something to watch, right? We're not sure where it's going. That's great. I should have mentioned, of course, the Seth Rollins interview with Bryan Saxton that was interrupted by Finn Balor. This was probably Finn Balor's best segment he's ever done in the WWE, ever. And here's the reason. Once again, it didn't look like he was playing a character. It didn't look like he was reading a line. All night long, this was the case, is everything had sort of a logical flow to it, and people didn't feel like characters. They felt like themselves all night long. Well, Finn Balor usually feels like a character, and not a very good one. That's why I'm not a big Finn Balor fan. He always comes off as, whether he's a face or a heel, he always comes off as he's reading off the back of his hand. This time he didn't. This time he just sat down. He didn't, you know, come in there yelling and screaming. He just sat down and said, look, this is not over until I say it's over. And it's going to be over when I'm holding that belt above my head. I'm going to do exactly what you did to me. And now you begin to look back and say, this was the start of Finn Balor becoming so bitter that he eventually turns heel and joins the Judgment Day and all this kind of stuff, because he never got over the fact that he had to relinquish a belt right after he won it and was injured by Seth Rollins, and he still blames Seth Rollins for that injury. Kudos to whoever wrote this, because Seth Rollins said probably one of the best lines I've heard in months, when Seth Rollins says, if this is all it's about, is revenge, then there's no need for a belt. The belt's irrelevant. If it's between you and I, and this is just some kind of revenge for what I did to you, then let's just settle it right now. Just make a move. Let's do it. That's logical. That's actually logical, where you say, look, if you're really mad at me, this isn't about professional wrestling, then. It's not about you and me going in and competing for a belt. You're angry with me. I've done something personal to you. So forget the belt. We'll just fight. That's what we'll do. You know, you're not in a bar with somebody and they throw a drink in your face and hit on your wife, and then you say, well, I'm going to challenge you to a match. later on in a gym somewhere. You know, you don't do that, right? You just say, hey, step outside. We'll settle it. Well, that's sort of what Rollins was saying. Forget the belt then. If this is this personal, if it's gotten to this stage, then we'll just fight. Great line. And Finn Balor says, no, that's fine. Because Finn Balor in his mind says, beating you up is one thing. Taking the belt is what's really going to hurt you. But then he comes back and attacks him anyway. And leaves him lying. Thought it was one of the better Finn Balor segments. Probably the best Finn Balor segment I've seen thus far, Mike.
I think so, too. And look, this is, if this leads to something where, I mean, look, he comes out, if they give him, he needs to just be himself. He's one of these guys that just needs to be himself. Because this seems like he was just being himself, right?
Yes.
He wasn't being the demon. He wasn't being the overblown Finn Balor. He was just being Prince Devitt, you know, or whatever Finn Balor's name is, whatever his real name is. He was just being that guy, right? It just seemed like that, you know. And this is one of the best things he's done in basically a while, and look, they're taking something that happened in the past that. I don't want to say it's not logical, but the way he feels is not logical, because if you remember what happened, it was his fault that he got hurt in the first place.
Right.
You know, and that he got, because he didn't take the move right, but
he had his own logic to it. Yeah, he has his own logic to it. Really good segment, Tom.
Yeah, and, you know, Finn Balor really surprised me, because he just – they almost – whoever wrote this was absolute genius, because they just told him to just be you. Don't be Finn Balor. Just be you. And they humanized him, and it made it seem like more of a fight and not a wrestling match. Like, he legitimately –
Oh, absolutely correct. So I'm cutting things short because we're getting close to out of time. I just want to say that the tag team match – might have been a little overbooked, you know. You had Seth Rollins come out and chase Finn Balor away. Then later on, you had obviously Liv Morgan come out, and her and Rhea Ripley got into it. Dominic Mysterio ends up pinned. But this was one of those Raw is War type endings where you say, oh, my God, so much happened in the main event that when you turn it off, Mike, you're still thinking about it going, wow, so much just happened.
Right. And that's the thing. I mean, we had a great tag team match earlier in the show, right? And basically, my feeling is, you have that great a match, you can basically overbook this thing, and nobody's going to care, because that first one was really that good, right? And so that's what this was. I loved it. I loved it, you know. There are certain times when overbooking is good. This is one of those times.
And this is one of them, because it left you saying, wow. Liv Morgan is probably going to go after Rhea Ripley first. You've got the Seth Rollins thing heating up. I thought, listen, there was one mistake in this whole entire thing, and it was made by Trish Stratus, and it was very minor. Everything else felt like an old episode of Raw is War. I turned my television set off saying, what did I just see? Did I just see something from 15 years ago? It's like the light switch clicked in their head somewhere in creative, and they decided they're going to do an episode the way it's supposed to be. And even though that one mistake happened, Mike, I'm giving this an A+.
I've got to give it an A+ as well. And look, I mean, look, we see through lines in so many storylines, right? We see through lines, and we see possible branches on a tree, you know.
A lot of them.
We know. Yeah, and look, I'll go back to one thing, that match between the Viking Raiders and the Alpha Academy. We all the time think, well, the Alpha Academy is going to be in a middling tag team. No, they've showed that they have potential of possibly holding those titles again.
Absolutely. And listen, I can't tell you the last time two things really surprised me on a show where I'm like, I did not see that coming at all. Not at all. And there was at least two things that surprised me. I never saw Maxine going through a table ever, let alone last night. And I really didn't see the Chelsea Green, Sonya Deville thing coming at all. And I didn't expect to be actually enthralled with a Finn Balor segment. So, yeah, even though that minor mistake by Trish Stratus, I'm still giving it an A+. Tom, what's your rating?
Yeah, A+ for me, because the minor mistake by Trish Stratus, that wasn't written. That things like that happen. But the Viking Raiders Alpha Academy stole the show. I was thoroughly entertained by every single thing in this show. It was well written. It was well done. A+ for me, definitely.
Put a lot of branches on the trees. I'm telling you, there's so much to work with on this show now. Todd, what's your rating?
I'm going to give it an A+ as well.
Wow, so let's give Raw an official.
Fast ball and a high drive into deep left center field. It's away, out, and gone.
Raw gets an A+ from all of us. Keep it up, man. I want Raw is War. Last night I got Raw is War. Keep up the good work.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio.